And now please stay in your seats in the Zazen posture for the Teisho on Great Master Dogen's Shobogenzo Genjo Koan. And this will take 10 or 12 minutes, after which we'll together chant three times the Bodhisattva vows, the Shugu Seigan Mon, and then I'll ring the bell to end the Zazen period. So, paragraph 7. When a person attains realization, it's like the moon's reflection in water. The moon never becomes wet, and the water is never disturbed. Although the moon is a vast and great light, it is reflected in a drop of water. The whole moon and even the whole sky are reflected in a drop of dew on a blade of grass. Realization does not destroy the person, as the moon does not make a hole in the water. The person does not obstruct realization, as a drop of dew does not obstruct the moon in the sky. The depth is the same as the height. To investigate the significance of the length and brevity of time, we should consider whether the water is great or small, and understand the size of the moon in the sky. Some translations begin this section, when a person attains enlightenment. Here, the Okamura translation says, when a person attains realization. There's still a temptation for us to think that this is some special event in the future which a few people may achieve. And this isn't at all what Dogen means here. Remember, he is the man who said practice is enlightenment. So he isn't changing the subject in this paragraph, and in fact, he's simply elaborating issues he's raised previously about space and time. And he's taking us now away from a more purely philosophical discussion to some concrete examples which give us a chance to explore this guidance a little more deeply. So, I emphasize, Dogen is not talking about a Kensho. He's talking about our intrinsic enlightenment. And the moon, the image of the moon, is a symbol of enlightenment, but it is our enlightenment. It's not outside us. And remember, the awakened state is not a fixed thing. It's not something which you have. It's something, in fact, that our Zazen sitting gives voice to, puts before the world at large. Remember in the Hanya Shingo, which we chant very regularly, Kanzeon, or Avalokiteshvara's immersion in deepest wisdom, is what we experience every day when we sit on our Zafu. And Dogen goes on to say, in paragraph 4 earlier, we endlessly express this trace of enlightenment. It isn't just when we're sitting. We carry enlightenment with us all the time. In sitting, it's more readily disclosed because we're less distracted. So the moon never becomes wet and the water is never disturbed. Nothing takes away from our innate enlightenment. The paragraph runs on. Although the moon is a vast and great light, it's reflected in a drop of water. The whole moon and even the whole sky are reflected in a drop of dew on a blade of grass. When we sit Zazen, space and time dissolve. When we are in the present moment, that's the only moment there is. And when we are where we are, that where we are contains everywhere. Everything in space and time is now and here. Which I always like to run together, because of course now and here make nowhere. As everything is empty, it can't be contained. And yet, it's contained in everything, and it contains everything. Human logic can't grapple with this, but every time we sit, we experience this, even if we don't really understand that that's what we're experiencing, and even if our experience is perhaps momentary. Dogen goes on to say, realization does not destroy the person, as the moon does not make a hole in the water. So I think it's important for us to remember that we don't disappear into the void. We don't fall down some hole. I do remember a question that was asked in a mondo of Maitre Gi at the Bristol Zen Dojo a couple of years ago by someone who said, I'm worried that if I sit Zazen and if I manage to reduce my ego, I'll somehow vanish. And I think that's what Dogen is addressing here. The moon does not make a hole in the water. We don't disappear. We don't vanish. We're washed clean, maybe. He goes on, a person does not obstruct realization as a drop of dew does not obstruct the moon. In other words, again, we can't undo our intrinsic enlightenment. The depth is the same as the height. Well, in one sense, this is just the simple physics of mirrors and reflections. The further you stand away from the mirror, the smaller you are, the more the mirror contains. The closer you stand, the shorter the distance between you and your image. So we can see this as just a physical description of the way light works. But Dogen, I think, is saying something, I was about to say, more subtle. In a way, it's more subtle and it's more obvious. What does size mean if the moon, which is a quarter of a million miles away and is a quarter of the size of the Earth, if all of that can go into a single raindrop on a leaf, what on earth does size mean? And if all time can be encompassed in this moment now, how big is time? It has no dimension. And I think that's what he's drawing our attention to here. He says we should investigate the length and brevity of time by considering whether water is great or small and understanding the size of the moon in the sky. And I think he's talking about this, the way that everything telescopes down and then expands massively and does this simultaneously. And this is something that we can only really grasp through our sitting. It's not an intellectually understandable thing. And yet, we are in awe of the immensity of the universe. And there it is, the whole sky in a drop of water. In the Hokyo Zanmai, the precious mirror samadhi, we read, avoid one-sided clinging. This is all the natural and superior truth that does attach itself to no delusion or enlightenment. It calmly, clearly shows when all conditions ripen, when minute, infinitesimally small becomes, when large, it transcends all dimension, space. Even the slightest twitch will surely break the rhythm. And it seems to me that this is discussing the same thing about size collapsing down and expanding, and then this issue that the moment that a thought appears, the moment that we try to attack it with the contents of our head, the whole thing vanishes. In actual fact, although the Hokyo Zanmai says even the slightest twitch will surely break the rhythm, in fact, we can't do anything that disrupts our natural perfection, however bad we may feel about something we've thought or done. Underneath all of the superficial stuff of the human head sits the Buddha nature, findable, touchable, through Zazen. In a way, Dogen is pointing out the, forgive the pun, lunacy of trying to measure our universe. He's pointing to the difference between numerical measures and our actual experience, to make his teaching concrete and applicable, something which he'll go on to elaborate in the remainder of the Genjo Koan. In the Tenzo Kaiokan, Dogen points to the importance of taking care of a single grain of rice. And here it seems to me that this is not dissimilar from his admiration and poetic expression of the drop of dew that contains the universe. So we need to pay attention to that detail, to avoid making mistakes, to avoid generating new karma. And I'd just like to end by remembering that Master Deshimaru used to like to say, Zazen returns us to the normal condition. I like to say, Zazen rebuilds us without the walls. And now please stay in your seats. And we're going to pick up in the sixth talk on Master Dogen's Genjo Koan, the section which in the study text is labelled as paragraph 8. And it's possible we'll get a little further into a part of paragraph 9. We'll see how we do. So far, in the preceding seven sections, Dogen has demonstrated to us the inability of our intellectual understanding to grasp enlightenment. He says, if we try to understand with our heads, we'll miss the point. We can't see our innate enlightenment. In any case, awakening, being awakened, is an engaged action within life. It's not a static thing, it's not a state. That we must turn our light within to find the key to the way, but that when we let go of our small self, we don't vanish. Even though we have no permanent self, we get in touch with something deeper. And finally, he's been saying that time and space, as we understand them, are not exactly wrong, how to say, that our grasp of them is so limited that we fail to understand their depth. And his demonstration that the whole sky and the moon can be contained in a drop of water is his attempt to articulate the way that our constructs are finite in a world, in a universe that's not. So he goes on to say, when the Dharma has not yet fully penetrated body and mind, one thinks one is already filled with it. When the Dharma fills body and mind, one thinks something is still lacking. For example, when we sail a boat into the ocean beyond sight of land and our eyes scan the horizon in the four directions, it simply looks like a circle. No other shape appears. This great ocean, however, is neither round nor square. It has inexhaustible characteristics. To a fish it looks like a palace, to a heavenly being a jeweled necklace. To us, as far as our eyes can see, it looks like a circle. All the myriad things are like this. Within the dusty world and beyond, there are innumerable aspects and characteristics. We only see or grasp as far as the power of our eye of study and practice can see. When we listen to the reality of myriad things, we must know that there are inexhaustible characteristics in both ocean and mountains, and there are many other worlds in the four directions. This is true not only in the external world, but also right under our feet or within a single drop of water. So Dogen warns us that when we think we're making progress in the Dharma, we're not. And when we think we've got it hacked, that we understand it all, that we know how to act within it, we don't. And when the Dharma fills the body and mind, one thinks something is still lacking. My first teacher said, yes, what's lacking is expression. It's not a static thing. So when we're cooked, in inverted commas, we still have to act. Stasis solves nothing. This lack of expression and action freezes us and leaves us stuck. In the ox herding pictures, the tenth one is returning to the marketplace with bliss bestowing hands, you will remember. And here, the Dharma flows through us, unimpeded. Dogen talks about the limitations of our sight when we're in a boat and way out on the ocean. We just seem to be in the middle of a circle. We see everything from our unique viewpoint. Uchiyama Roshi talks about two people sitting in a room looking at the same cup, a ceramic cup. And he says, for each of them, the light and shade is different. The angle of vision is different. The things they see in the background are different. Everything is in fact different, although we still think of it objectively, and I'll put that word in inverted commas, we still think of it objectively as the same cup. And one of the study group, Carolyn, came up with a rather nice quote from Jasutani Roshi. He says, "All existence is relative. However, each person creates his or her own world, and the perceptions of each depend on his or her state of mind." So whatever we see is through the filter of our personality, of our karma, if you like, of our life history, of everything we've done before, contained in that one moment of time at which we look. So our unique viewpoint is partial. And as Dogen beautifully says, when the light glints on the water, when seen from above by a heavenly being, it looks like jewels, almost like Carolyn's Indra's jeweled net. And for a fish, of course, it's home, it's three dimensions. We see the sea as the surface, but for a fish, it's where it lives. And everything's like this. Our intellect is a very poor tool, a limited tool for studying our world. It's inadequate. We're finite. We can't really conceptualize the universe. When we think of the universe, we immediately think of it as perhaps a large sphere. And the next question is, well, what's outside it? And of course, that's a logical impossibility because we've just said the universe is everything there is. And yet our brains just can't work around that very satisfactorily. Well, maybe yours can. Mine surely cannot. So our way of seeing the world is inevitably limited and short of the task. And Dogen goes on to say, as far as we can see, as far as the power of our eye of study and practice can see. And he's pointing us back to the fact that we may have the rational brain, the rational mind, the scientific view, but we've also got the intuitive understanding of things. And we have the power to grasp things in an entirely different way. But with our brain, we will never be able to understand the vast, all-pervading One. When he talks about listening to the reality of myriad things, I wonder whether he's quite consciously making a reference to Kanzeon Bosatsu, Avalokiteshvara, one of whose names is Cry Hearer, he or she who hears the cry of the world. The myriad things are, of course, all phenomena. And just to confuse us, really, Buddhism uses the word Dharma in the singular to mean the Buddha's teaching, but the word Dharmas with a small d to mean phenomena at large. So the myriad things, everything we experience within the dusty world and beyond, has innumerable aspects and characteristics. And we can only see as far as the power of our eye of study and practice can see. And I do like the way he puts study and practice together there, especially as this echoes from a much earlier paragraph, which we've labelled 4 in our version, about what the nature of Buddhism is. To study Buddhism is to study the self. So we are brought up to think scientifically and objectively, but our thinking distances us from directly grasping reality itself. We need the intuitive view to enter what Kodo Sawaki called big mind, rather than the little mind that we have. Maddie's been talking in her last couple of Teishos on Thursdays about trust. And I was struck by something that Katagiri Roshi says, which seems pertinent. Your real self is always with you. You cannot escape it. That's a really important statement, because the study of Buddhism doesn't take us away completely from our life experience. We don't have to sever ourselves from everything that we experience in our normal everyday reality. That's not the point of it at all. The point is to see another level within it. So he says, your real self is always with you. You cannot escape it. Finally, this real self is the only thing you can trust in. If you want to learn what human life really is, there is no other way than starting to know what that self is. This one thing you can depend on is something you have to research. You have to understand what it is. Through spiritual practice, you can deepen your life. you can really know what is at the bottom of human life. That is the teaching of Shakyamuni Buddha and the emphasis of Zen Buddhism. So, looking ahead a little further to the beginning of the next section, Dogen continues the image of the fish and adds to it the image of a bird. When a fish swims, no matter how far it swims, it doesn't reach the end of the water. When a bird flies, no matter how high it flies, it cannot reach the end of the sky. He's not just talking about birds and fish here. We may think we're more sophisticated. Of course, we came from the sea originally. We can't reach the end of the water. We can't reach the end of the sky. When the bird's need or the fish's need is great, the range is large. When the need is small, the range is small. In this way, each fish and each bird uses the whole of space and vigorously acts in every place. Dogen was brought up as a Tendai monk initially, and that was a very intellectual study of the sutras and an attempt to bring together a cohesive and coherent description of the Buddha's teaching that could be enacted. And Dogen himself grew beyond that and wanted to plunge himself more deeply into the practice of Buddhism rather than the intellectual understanding of it. And here again, he points us to the absolute need for action, for taking our experience, our learning, our understanding, our action of Zazen, and playing it into our daily lives, living a life based on the vows of the Bodhisattva. So now please stay in your seat and we'll continue picking up from where we left off last week in Great Master Dogen's Genjo Koan. And he said, when a fish swims, no matter how far it swims, it doesn't reach the end of water. When a bird flies, no matter how high it flies, it cannot reach the end of the sky. We have boundaries, but they don't really represent a boundary. We have limits, but they bring no limitation. We have the whole of our natural environment. Of course, it's true that we can't individually flap our wings and fly. If we go underwater ourselves, it's usually for a very short space of time until our breath runs out. But when Maria Montessori, the famous educator, created a school for children, which emphasized free play and doing things that you wanted to do, the first thing she did was to build a fence around the playground, because she said, freedom, absolute freedom, but within this limit. And this is what we're learning here, what we're being reminded of here. We have carte blanche, so many options and possibilities, but not absolutely without a limit. When a bird's need or a fish's need is great, the range is large. When the need is small, the range is small. In this way, each fish and each bird uses the whole of space and vigorously acts in every place. This is perfectly fine. We have a plenty big enough playground. This thusness, this eternal presence, this reality before us and around us and in us, is totally sufficient to our needs. Our every need is provided proportionately. Dogen goes on, however, if a bird departs from the sky or a fish leaves the water, it immediately dies. We should know that for a fish, water is life. For a bird, sky is life. A bird is life. A fish is life. Life is a bird. Life is a fish. If we try to go beyond our true nature, we're doomed. For a bird, the sky itself is its home and its life. Life is a bird. We should see ourselves here. Dogen's not really talking about fish and birds. For us, our direct experience of life is sufficient, plenty to be getting on with. If we plunge into it, exhaust it, take it to the limit, we'll be satisfied. If we try to go beyond the edge of it, disaster awaits. And if we dither on the edge of life, wondering whether to dive in or not, we're going to end up being very uneasy and unfulfilled. As Dogen says, we should go beyond this. There is practice enlightenment. This is the way of living beings. When Dogen talks about living beings, he's really contrasting them with awakened beings. He talks about all beings, but he's really meaning ordinary people, ordinary things. In my rendering of the Genjo Koan into sectioned elements, I was tempted to forego the English distinction between practice with a C, the noun, and practice with an S, the verb, and to talk about practice enlightenment with an S, because it's not a thing, it's an action. So it's a verb to me. Our practice enlightenment, which we live in, which we inhabit, which we experience and exhibit every day, is an action, a verb. So I go against English convention a little here in the way that I've written it in the study version. Our way, the Buddha way, is to give everything we've got to right here and right now, to presence. Here's where we are and where we act. If our heads take us off into some fantasy, if we doubt our ability to face the pain and delight of living life, if we live in the shadow and hold back, we don't meet reality head on. We can't claim to be practicing enlightenment. Living our lives from the Buddha nature, expressing our innate awakening. Dogen goes on, therefore, if there are fish that would swim, or birds that would fly only after investigating the entire ocean or sky, they would find neither path nor place. I have to say that this, to me, is reminiscent of the story that the Buddha told, of the man who, having received a fatal wound from an arrow, felt, and this was Buddha's characterization of the way normal people operate, that he had to ask, who shot it? What kind of quality was the man who shot it? What sort of wood is the shaft made of? What animal provided the feathers? If we sit dithering and analyzing, we're stuck. We just have to dive in without a load of intellectualization. We will never understand the world, the cosmos, ourselves, or our place in the universe if we try to do it by thinking. Dogen goes on, when we make this very place our own, our practice becomes the actualization of reality. He says in the Fukan Za Zengi, to live by Zen is the same as to live an ordinary daily life. All you have to do is cease from erudition, withdraw within, and reflect upon yourself. And he describes this as the source of true wisdom. In the Genjo Koan, he continues, when we make this path our own, our activity naturally becomes actualized reality. When we make this path our own, our activity naturally becomes actualized reality. When we remove the thought frames and filters and we just get on with it, we are reality itself. We inhabit it, we express it, we realize it, making it real. He goes on, this path, this place is neither big nor small, neither self nor others. It has not existed before this moment, nor has it come into existence now. Therefore, the reality of all things is thus. And this takes us back to his earlier comment on 6.5 million or billion, it almost doesn't matter which, opportunities to experience the moment every day. When we take the plunge without analysing, without what we might call second mind, thinking it again, everything falls into place. Everything is as it is and as it should be, as it can only be. When we let go of self and let go of others, when body and mind fall away, we can inhabit the moment exactly and completely, open and ready for whatever we meet, trusting in our ability to take it and deal with it. We can live exactly in thusness, in suchness, tathāta suchness, the reality of things as it is, as Shunryu Suzuki used to say. Dogen continues, in the same way, when a person engages in practice enlightenment in the Buddha way, as the person realizes one Dharma, the person permeates that Dharma. As the person encounters one practice, the person fully practices that practice. When we live in this way, open, direct, confident that we can handle whatever comes up, play our part, make our contribution, when we do one thing fully, we do everything. When we throw ourselves completely into the practice, that's enough. That's the whole nine yards. Dogen's moment of enlightenment comes, and he describes it as the dropping off of body and mind. Zen is not an intellectual quest or a dry bookish study. Zen propels us eventually to drop all resistance to life, to throw it all into the flames and live unfettered, eternally unfettered lives. This is what Rujing Tendo Nyojo and Dogen meant by the phrase dropping off body and mind. Don't look elsewhere. Don't expect anything more. As it says in the Hokyo Zanmai, the most excellent mirror, Samadhi, guard well, for you now have. This is all. So now please stay in your seats and we'll turn our attention to the final paragraphs of Great Master Dogen's Genjo Koan. And last week we ended with a paragraph that said, in the same way when a person engages in practice enlightenment in the Buddha way, as the person realizes one Dharma, the person permeates that Dharma. As the person encounters one practice, the person fully practices that practice. And he goes on to say, for this there is a place and a path. The boundary of the known is not clear. This is because the known, which appears limited, is born and practiced simultaneously with the complete penetration of the Dharma. We should not think that what we've attained is conceived by ourselves and known by our discriminating mind. Although complete enlightenment is immediately actualized, its intimacy is such that it does not necessarily form as a view. In fact, viewing is not something fixed. So in this first part, the boundary of the known is not clear, and so on, Dogen reminds us that our intellect is basically of no use to us at all when we consider the Buddha way. Complete absorption means there's nothing left over so that we can, as it were, look over our own shoulder and see what we're doing. You know, this is not news to us. We've been reading this throughout the Genjo Koan. Throw yourself completely into your life and your practice. Bring your practice into the whole of your life. Remain present. And there is nothing left over. We're aware from having looked previously at the Fuken Zazengi, that Dogen's personal koan was, if we're already enlightened, what is it that we need to practice? If the Buddha nature is eternally present, always with and within us, how come we aren't always living from it? Why do we need to do zazen and keep the precepts? Why shave the head and become a monk? And he picks up this theme in the section in which he describes Zen master Baoche of Mount Magu, who was waving a fan. A monk approached him and asked, "The nature of wind is ever-present and permeates everywhere. Why are you waving a fan?" The master says, "You know only that the wind's nature is ever-present. You don't know that it permeates everywhere." The monk said, "How does the wind permeate everywhere?" The master just continued waving the fan. The monk bowed deeply. To be clear, this is not a conversation about wind and fans. This is a conversation about the wind of the Dharma. This is a discussion about the Buddha nature and the whole practice. If you believe that the wind is permanently present, why do you need to wave a fan? Master Bao Che's answer is very straightforward. It means you have an intellectual understanding, so you know the theory that it is ever present, but you can't feel the gentle breeze of the truth. You aren't fully open to it. You're still watching from the outside. Lots and lots of the koan stories are in fact descriptions either of the moment at which a monk came to Satori, to a penetrating insight, or they're descriptions of the moment that preceded that opening. And here we have one in which the master lays out clearly the monk's limitations and what it is he has to work with. It isn't enough for us to have an intellectual understanding if we don't put the practice into operation in our daily lives. It's no good knowing in theory how it works, because that doesn't change us cortically, it doesn't change our core. The monk asks, "Well, how does the wind of the truth permeate everything and everywhere?" And the master just demonstrates with his body his total immersion in right here, right now, without theory or speculation. Just this is it. We've heard that before in Matty's teaching. Dogen goes on to say, "The genuine experience of Buddha Dharma and the vital path that has been correctly transmitted are like this. To say we should not wave a fan because the nature of wind is ever present, and that we should feel the wind even when we don't have a fan, is to know neither ever presence nor the wind's nature." And then paradoxically, it is after all Dogen, he goes on to say, "Since the wind's nature is ever present, the wind of the Buddha's family enables us to realize the gold of the great earth and to transform the water of the long river into cream." So Dogen states this, just this is it, which I think was Master Sozan. Dogen restates this very simply in the final paragraph of the Genjo Koan. The place we've been headed to all along, the thing he's been drawing us towards. It is the answer to his own personal koan. There's no way to put the solution into words. Only our actions in the physical world, only the way we take care of that world and all the beings in it, only when we value a single blade of grass, as he says, or a grain of rice, as we value our own eyesight, will we close the apparent gap between heaven and earth? And will we live harmoniously in the eternal present with the body and mind fallen away? Then everything we meet, including ourselves, truly is the Buddha.